Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Burke Allen Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We are live in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. today with our special guest, Emmy Award winner and author Terry Irving. His brand new book is Courier. It's set back in 1972, Watergate scandal as Washington on edge. And the book is about a Vietnam veteran who is a motorcycle courier, one of the capital's leading TV stations, trying to get his life back together after the war. And Rick picks up some film from a news crew. And then his life begins to unravel as everyone involved dies within hours of the interview. Rick realizes he is the next target. It's a fast-paced thriller set in the time before Facebook, before Twitter, and on the back of a BMW R52 motorbike. This is the kind of book that you read and you go, there is a movie there. And high praise for this book from no less than folks like Ted Koppel, who was the longtime anchor for NBC's Nightline. Ted Koppel writes, if the phrase a crackling good yarn evokes an era before Twitter, Facebook, cell phones, videotapes, DVDs, or cable television, then welcome to Terry Irving's fast-paced thriller. Terry Irving, a longtime producer and writer for Nightline. Sam Donaldson also chimed in with high praise for the book. Terry Irving, a four-time Emmy Award-winning writer and producer, he's also won 3 Peabody Awards, 3 DuPont Awards, and has been a producer, editor, or writer with ABC, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, The Don Imus Show, and Terry Irving joins us today on The Burke Allen Show. Hey, Terry.
Hi. You know, those Emmys aren't all that hard. They come in cereal boxes.
And then they're all up on the mantle. Well, writing a book is likely a little tougher, but Sam Donaldson, longtime White House reporter, calls it the thriller of the year. Congratulations on all the accolades for Courier.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, as a guy who was actually around at that time, is this really the way it happened back in the early 70s? Were there really motorcycle couriers who delivered the film to the TV stations in order for it to make the evening news?
Absolutely. We have to think it. It was film. There was no videotape. There was no microwave. In order to put the Watergate hearings on the air, it took them three weeks or a month to build a studio on top of they used a garage roof that was next to the hearing room, and run the cables all the way back to the station. In order to broadcast it, I mean, there was no easy way of getting it out. They shot it on film, had to be brought back, and then it had to be developed. Nobody thought anything about it because nobody really expected. I don't think anybody really expected it to be as easy as now. You could probably do it all on a telephone. I mean, it's yeah. So there's about 40 of us, 20 maybe. 25, 30, 40 of us that in D.C. that There were no bike messengers, oddly enough. Nobody, I can think of none of those skinny, you know, muscly guys. But there were, you know, BMWs and Nortons and a lot of Harleys running around town, some of them in, yeah, sort of uniforms. And if you had a, my feeling was back then, if you had a helmet and a radio and looked sort of scruffy, you could walk into any place in Washington.
Well, you know, there's a great line in the book, and I really enjoyed reading it, where, you know, this lead character, Rick Putnam, is dispatched from the TV station to go to the White House, and he essentially waves at the guard on the way in. He has to get a driver's license out before he walks into the West Wing. That's the extent of the security. It happens to be his birthday, and the guard sings happy birthday to him. So a whole different world than what we have today with the White House. And I would imagine, Terry, you've seen enormous changes in everything that has to do with Washington
right.
and politics in the last three decades and covering it. Tell me some of the sort of the highlights of your careers, things that you were able to sort of be a fly on the wall in, and now looking back on it, you go, I can't believe I was there.
Well, as a courier, it was, I mean, being a courier was a no-brainer. I mean, it was, somebody came up and offered me money in order to ride a BMW, where I would have paid them at 21 years old. I would absolutely have paid them to be a courier. I was at, I watched Spiro Agnew go into court in Baltimore. People they may remember that, but he was the vice president. And plead nolo contendere, I'm not going to fight it, to a charge of taking bribes in the Oval Office. I mean, little cheesy $1,000 bribes from contractors from when he was Maryland state governor. You know, I was in the hall during the Saturday Night Massacre as I now realize all the staffers were desperately trying to get the evidence out. The President Nixon had just fired Special Prosecutor Cold for having, had the audacity to ask for the tapes. And the staffers didn't trust that anybody, the FBI coming in, was going to keep any of the evidence, so they were all trying to get it out. I remember watching them just running around. People have asked me, you know, well, isn't it worse now? And the answer is really no. it's not. And Richard Nixon, and the more, over the years, what I find fun writing book was that, you know, I was there. There was a certain amount that I remember and a certain amount that I knew and everybody knew. But it's nothing compared to what's come out now. Because now they've had the court cases and they've had books and they've had confessions and they've had magazine articles. Richard Nixon really ran a criminal enterprise. It was stunningly without any sort of moral center. This just came out this year. He made a deal with the South Vietnamese in 1968, which President Lyndon Johnson knew about and documented, but illegally, that the South Vietnamese blew off the Paris peace talks. And he basically said, you go with us and we'll give you a better deal. Don't make a deal with Lyndon Johnson. And he barely won the 68 election over Hubert Humphrey. Over 20,000 American soldiers died after 1969, if you add it up, which is a pretty high cost to win an election. And he ran his whole administration like that. You can't – people – and people say, well, it's worse now. Not even close. The regulations – that were put in place after 1975 when they had the hearings, the church hearings. There are at least some sort of watchdogs, some sort of limits. And in government, all rhetoric aside, the federal government really isn't made up anymore of political hacks who, you know, who, I mean, if you call down and ask somebody, to be honest with you, if you call down to the IRS and ask somebody to pull off an illegal audit, they wouldn't do it. I mean, he did it all over the place with Nixon. There is a big difference. I mean, there's, I would actually say that there's a lot more outrage now about a lot less. I mean, it just.
Kerry Irving
just
is our guest today, and he's getting into the politics of Watergate. If you're just joining us on the program, he was there to see it all. And it's that era where he set his brand new thriller, Courier. It's a crime fiction novel from Angry Robot Books, and he has several books planned in the Freelancer series. It's just an incredibly thrilling book, and if you get an opportunity to pick it up, you can find it online in bookstores everywhere. That's Courier from Kerry Irving. As a guy, you know, who's an Emmy Award-winning journalist, I want to get just sort of a quick reaction to some of the things that have happened that you have covered in the news and you've seen happen in the last, almost 30 years in the business. Some horrible, like Watergate and in Vietnam, and then there were some other sort of softer stories. Tell me what you remember about your coverage of the royal wedding of Charles and Diana.
I did cover the royal wedding. I mean, I have been to one way or another, either broadcasting from the control room or on the scene, I guess, most of the major events, which is funny because when I look at it and compare it to a normal person, it looks like a lot, but you have to remember that I hang around with people that have been to much worse places and many more of them, so I always think I haven't done very much. Charles and Diana, it was funny because I got there, and my mother called, actually, and said, could you shoot some pictures so that I'd have an idea of your view of the wedding? So I took some pictures of the hotel room that I was editing in. I mean, I never got outside. we were working 18, 19 hours a day in these hotel rooms. The only thing that was really great was the day of the wedding. There was probably six, seven edit rooms working and some switching centers and whatever. And right as the wedding, you know, she was walking in, I hear this noise, and I go out, and the senior producer and supervising producer, Mitch Davis, was having an absolute screaming match with the hotel manager who was about to cut the power. Some wires were smoking. I mean, we were using up far, far more power than the hotel could take, and it was absolutely, you know, it was a wonderful event. But I went and saw it. To be honest, the day after, I had a day off, and I took a walk down the entire. You know, I knew every inch of the procession. I knew every inch of the. That was really nice. I mean, just to be able to see all the things and all, without all the thousands of people in trouble. But no, unfortunately, that one, like many of them, I spent in an edit room. I mean, I was at Tiananmen Square, was done. They shipped, they couldn't edit anything. They weren't even allowed to really shoot anything. And they shipped all the tapes out to me. I was in Hong Kong, which at that point was not a part of China. And I edited it together. I just wrote a piece on that where I talked about identifying each camera and when they were shooting and where they were, and pinpointing them on a map of Tiananmen Square, and so I could match up exactly what was happening. And it was a very confusing situation for anybody covering it. Although, I will say, when I got to the end of it, I can pretty well say that no students died in Tiananmen Square, contrary to popular belief. A lot of other people died. They weren't students, and they didn't mostly die in Tiananmen Square. They died about 3 miles away in a big battle that was fought. I mean, the story there is totally different than what was presented. And that was just
a blow
to the
wall. Lots of times when you see that, when things come out that are completely different than sort of public perception. And one of those I want to ask you about, when we come back from the commercial break, because as we broadcast live today, the anniversary just happened, the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. You were there. You were on site. You saw it all, and I want to get your firsthand recollections of that. We're talking with Terry Irving, the author of the brand-new book, Courier. Sam Donaldson, longtime TV staple, calls it the thriller of the year. Back with more with Terry Irving right after this on the Burke Allen Show. Hang on. Thank you so much for listening. We're live in D.C.
Over
today.
Over 14 million people witnessed his emotional story of survival and triumph on national television.
I've been doing this enough for so long, like ever since I was a kid.
Millions more voted him their favorite in a landslide win.
The winner is...
And now, you can be a part of the experience live.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Ain't that a kick in the head?
Your America's Got Talent winner.
I've got you.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Under my
Live. Performing classics from the Great American Songbook and his Columbia Records debut CD, That's Life.
That's Life.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.'s That's Life Tour. The one concert event this year you absolutely can't miss.
Catch Landau Eugene Murphy Jr. on tour with the former lead vocalist for The Temptations, Flatters and Drifters, Leonard Coleman and Blunt this holiday season. More details online at LandauMurphyJr.com. Greg Tim singing They Don't Write Them Like That Anymore, and his big 80s hit, the breakup song. And there's a great book that is written like they used to write them. It's set in the early 70s. It's a fantastic thrill ride through the streets of Washington, D.C. It's called Courier. The author of the book is Terry Irving. Terry, along with being a fantastic writer, is also a four-time Emmy Award winner, a Peabody Award winner, and a longtime national television producer and writer for ABC, CNN, The Don Imus Show, of all things. And as we broadcast live on this 10th of November, 2014, the anniversary, the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall is being celebrated. Gorbachev just spoke there. Terry Irving, you were right there on site, and I'd love to get your firsthand recollection. What do you remember about the fall of the Berlin Wall?
I got to tell you, that was just one of the most surreal occasions. I was in East Berlin listening. Well, I mean, I don't speak German. And you actually, when you're working like I do in as many different countries and you're surrounded by languages you don't speak, you forget, because you always have somebody around you, a translator, a fixer, a cameraman, someone who's translating for you. So you sort of forget, but the news conference was going on, and I've read now that apparently one of the bureaucrats just made a mistake and said, oh, yeah, we're going to open up the wall, anybody can come through. That originally they were talking about, increasing the number of people could go visit their grandmother or something. And I was downstairs on the phone with Nightline, and they said, yeah, I don't think we need a story tonight, so don't worry about it. And I came upstairs, and one out of four of the TV crews tore out of there. And the kid who was working with us, who was a German-American, went racing out with the film. Now, let's see. Wait a minute. That's not all right. It would have been taped then. With the tape, and said, I got to get back. Because crossing between east and west was, at that point, 2 hours, to go through. I mean, it was still Checkpoint Charlie. It was still, forever. And my crew said, nothing happened. And I was like, what? And they said, nothing happened. I said, well, and so I went and got, first off, I made my crew listen to the news. And the news said, yeah, the wall's going to get opened. And they go, we don't believe it. So we're in the center of East Berlin. We went to the Alexanderplatz where they had the big, it's probably where they had, I didn't see it, but they probably had the celebration of it. But, I mean, it was the big center of East Berlin. Nobody, nothing, no life. We went to the train station, and nobody would believe us. We kept saying, well, the wall's going to open tonight. What do you think? And then the answer was always, the wall's going to open tonight? Are you crazy? Except that actually the only interesting thing there was a little guy, a little sort of ratty-looking guy at the back of the crowd at one point said, you can't talk about that kind of thing in the station. We used secret police, obviously. And somebody in the crowd said, why? You think we think something different outside the station? And then I actually went to see the leader of the opposition, what little opposition there was allowed. I mean, it's very mild. They jailed everybody else. And he didn't believe me. And he's being interviewed by the TASS. People forget. TASS was the Soviet communist wire service. He was being interviewed by the TASS correspondent. And he looked over at him, and the TASS guy nods sort of regretfully. He goes, what? And then he turns around and starts watching it on television. It's playing behind him, silent. But he didn't have anything ready to say. I mean, so then I go back, and it takes me 2.5 hours to cross through Checkpoint Charlie and and get back. And then by the time I crossed back over, they had – the whole thing was a mistake. It's one of those wonderful mistakes. It was the time it should happen. It happened – because the Soviet, and Gorbachev really was there. I mean, he was the one. The troops said, "No, we're not gonna stop the people. We're not gonna shoot people for this." A day later, I came through Checkpoint Charlie waving my press pass, and the guys all just waved. The guys who had been complete jerks 2 days before. Just waved me through as I ran past. But, I mean, yeah, the world changed completely. I mean, it was just, it was insane. People on the streets, sat with us the ninth. People on the streets, they all walked over. They all walked up and down. The Trabants, the terrible little East German cars, drove around West Berlin, and all the West Berliners hated them viciously because the cars polluted everything. And then Monday, they all went back to work. And I finally got to sleep because we were broadcasting 6:30 to 7:30 in the morning. That's when Nightline 11:30 to 12:30 is on, if you're in Europe. And then I would start doing another day. I finally got to sleep, went back to the hotel, and found that they had I hadn't extended my reservation. And they'd given away my room. I mean, there was a revolution, and everything had changed, and the Cold War was over. But I hadn't extended my reservations. They threw me out. I mean,
literally everything changed, including your housing status.
Well, nothing didn't they ask, exactly. I mean, the Germans are very orderly. It doesn't matter if there's a revolution in the streets. It only matters if you've done the paperwork properly.
I love it. Gary Irving is our guest. The book is Courier, and it's in bookstores now and available at Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. Lots of big names in journalism have given you blurbs for this book, and We only have a couple of minutes left, but I want to get sort of a, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, the very first word or words that come to mind when I mention some of the journalists that you work with, some of the folks who are you know, big names, national names that you've rubbed up against in history. So you're ready? This is one of those word association things. Here we go. First thing that comes to mind when I say Ted Koppel.
Honest.
Barbara Walters.
I mean, makeup.
makeup.
Well, yeah, but the other part of that is she was the real deal. She was smart and tough as nails. And when she came in, Lolli, they were out to get her. She wasn't mistaken when she thought all the men in the business wanted her fired. She was right. They did.
Wow.
Wow. And she fought them to a standstill, and she won. I mean, yeah, no, when I say makeup, she came in, I know I'm being quick, but one morning there was this thing, she talked to the Shah of Iran after he'd had to flee and before he died when the Iranian Revolution happened. And she took a photograph of him in his pajamas and, you know, silk dressing gown. And she came in that morning. I was working the World News, the Morning News. And we were writing it, and I was typing it. And she was pretty good as a journalist. And she said, "No, I don't have any time. I can't go to makeup." I said, "No, you're going to go to makeup." Because at 6:30 in the morning, she looked like she'd been dragged behind the limousine. I swear. Abby, I'm not, you know, I was like, "No, I'm not ruining your career for the rest of your life. You're going to makeup." And, you know, in the morning, makeup people in television are miracle workers. And she came out. I mean, it's not to take away from the fact that she's really an amazingly good journalist. But
fair enough. All right. Now let's,
she's tough.
Let's head over to CNN. Wolf Blitzer, first word that comes to mind.
Sweet. Wolf is exactly the guy you see on television. That is, there is nothing, there is no other side to him. He's funnier off air. He is absolutely family devoted. He's capable of making some wonderful jokes, but he's basically what you see. And he's a sweet guy. He just is. I wrote for him for a while, and, you know, I had written for Ted, and I'd written for Aaron Brown, who was one of the most just complex writers, and David Brinkley. But when you wrote for Wolf, you had to write, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, I mean, just very, you know, just facts, ma'am, like that. And every once in a while I would write a sort of looping sentence that was correct, but sort of got around to it. I mean, Wolf would just chew it up. He just he'd change it back. It was just fun to watch. I loved working with him. He's smart. He knows his business. He can broadcast for days. He was a good guy and very nice guy.
All right, fair enough. And 10 seconds for our last guy, Sam Donaldson.
Biting. When Sam,
wow.
Much in those days, in 1972, 1976, Sam used to come in and he was newly divorced, and he would actually bite people, bite women on the shoulder. I worked with him just recently when I got the blurb for the book. I had just worked with him for Retirement Living, and he just at 80 retired from ABC finally. He owns most of New Mexico. But he was wonderfully crazy. He was also the best reporter in the White House. Absolutely.
Fair enough. We've been talking with Terry Irving, the author of the brand new book, Courier. And you can find out more about Terry at terryirving.com. The book is available in bookstores everywhere. It is the thriller of the year, according to Sam Donaldson, and I would have to agree. Terry Irving, thanks for being on the show today, and thank you for listening. Now, I'm going to make-